Good evening, little ones. It's July 14th, 2023, and it's 18:37 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green, and I'm happy to be with you today. This is a quote from Carl Jung, the famous Swiss psychiatrist, or one of the famous Swiss psychiatrists. I believe Sigmund Freud was also Swiss, was he not? I'm not sure. We're looking at Sigmund Freud is perhaps more famous, but Carl Jung, well known. He said, "The soul needs your recklessness, not your wisdom." It's a rather fascinating concept, isn't it? Lao Tzu, the Chinese philosopher, said, "I have just three things to teach: simplicity, patience, compassion. These three are your greatest treasures." And Mark Twain said, "The man who is a pessimist before 48 knows too much. If he is an optimist after it, he knows too little." And our song for today is from Carole King, a piano-playing songwriter, who wrote this song in 1971. It was published. It reached number one on three U.S. charts and number two on Canada's RPM Top Singles. Those are the best chart results. But it was released later by as a cover song for this original version by James Taylor. So James Taylor re-released the song in his own version of it, and that's perhaps a lot more famous than this version. But this is the original Carole King version. It's called, from 1971, "You've Got a Friend." Thank you. true megalith, I don't know what to call it, giant of a song. You know, he's saying that it's in the smallest things in which there is the greatest value, such as in the case of the poor widow who gave the smallest amount of money, but it was all she had, and she donated it to the poor, or to the temple for Jehovah's use, to help those in need. In our article, Born and Raised, we have chapter 2 now. Backdating Yesterdays, it's called. One day after another day causes speech to bubble forth, and one night after another night shows forth knowledge. Psalm 19 and 2 from the New World Translation, 1984. Is the theme scripture for this chapter, the theme scripture. Oh, I'm doing fairly well today. I think I've taken 5 doses of the antibiotic so far, in the second day now, so my tooth is not suffering as much pain, I think that's safe to say, but there's still, pain is not gone completely, and it may not be an infection that was causing some of it. You know, some of the pain may not be attributable to infection as the cause, but there are many ways in which we could attempt to deal with that particular tooth. I found out the Aylmer dentist, whose facility I used to attend, now has 2 new dentists, and perhaps much of the same equipment, or you know, it has better equipment in some cases than it used to, but it's still there, just far away from where I'm located, and but I've been phoning people today to find out what I can learn about different things. So I phoned also my periodontist, and my dentist is not open today, actually, but I'm going through the weekend now, and I'll be researching probably more about my particular problem at the proper time, hopefully. Now, chapter 2 of Born and Raised says, when the second temple was destroyed in 70 CE, it also occurred that the priests lost their only genealogical record of the family lines entitled to act as priests. Now, quoting from the Insight on the Scriptures from 2018, volume 1, page 909, the official genealogies of the Jews were destroyed, not by King Herod the Great, as Africanus maintained, in the early 3rd century, but evidently by the Romans at the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 CE, or that is 70 AD, as some people call it. And the quote, or not a quote, but the reference given for this assertion is from against Appian, the reference. Against Appian by Josephus. What's his first name? I'm trying to remember. His first name is escaping me right now. It's Josephus, the Jewish historian. Book 1, section 30 through 38. And also from the Jewish War, book 2, sections 426 to 428. And book 6, also of that latter work, from page 354, or whatever, sorry, volume 6, section 354 is what that is. And there are a lot of details, sub-references there, as well. Included there, if someone's going to look it up, you can refer to those sub-references. Not sure what all of it means. Until you look at the book, you won't be sure what the references refer to. And then the quote goes on, the statement goes on regarding the genealogies. Since that time, that is 70 CE, the Jews have been unable to establish their descent. This is the most important statement. The Jews have been unable to establish their descent since 70 CE in even the two most important lines, David and Levi. And we are focusing on the line of Levi here regarding the temple service, because the Levites were the ones, including the priests. That was the tribe from which the Levites and the priests were taken. But David is an equally important line, because how can the Jews look for their Messiah anymore if they don't have proof of the line of David from which the Messiah was prophesied to come? That's an equally important, perhaps even more important, but an equally important statement. The loss of their priestly genealogies, now continuing our paragraph here with the author being yours truly, the loss of their priestly genealogies is certainly an effective guarantee against the continuation of Jewish traditional temple worship, thus ending the Torah law. But if the Jewish religion ended, what took its place? So that's a very, very important introduction to this chapter 2. Referring to this important idea that the Jewish religion has effectively ended, both by the cessation of the accurate records of the line of David, and also by this cessation of the line of Levi with regard to its records, so that no priests can be identified from any written record as belonging to the line of Levi, and no possible Messiah can be identified as belonging to the line of David. So the Jewish religion is effectively ended. And since Jesus was a Jew and performed miracles and offered a ransom for the sin of Adam, the logical inference or conclusion, the logical reasoning about that would be that Jesus was the Messiah. That's the obvious thing there. He was the Messiah is the obvious point there. And shortly after, 40 years after his impalement, the Jewish temple with its records, those genealogical, some people say genealogical, I like to say, records were destroyed for all time, destroyed unless somebody produces them. They're gone. So now Proverbs 16 and 7, our proverb for today. When Jehovah takes pleasure in the ways of a man, he causes even his enemies themselves to be at peace with him. This is a remarkable chapter in Proverbs, actually. They're all remarkable, all the Proverbs, actually. They all are very, very remarkable. I mean, very full of wisdom. Even his enemies are at peace with a man in whom Jehovah takes pleasure. It's another way of wording that. Perhaps we can read Numbers 14. It's a very interesting, I mean, this is one of the great pivotal chapters in Scripture, because they've just spied out the land from Kadesh Barnea, the wilderness of Paran. They went up from there and spied out the promised land. Then all the assembly raised their voice, and the people continued giving vent to their voice and weeping all through that night. And all the sons of Israel began to murmur against Moses and Aaron, and all the assembly began to say against them, "If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness. And why is Jehovah bringing us to this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Is it not better for us to return to Egypt?" They even went to saying to one another, "Let us appoint a head, and let us return to Egypt." At this, Moses and Aaron fell upon their faces before all the congregation of the assembly of the sons of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were of those who spied out the land, ripped their garments apart, and they proceeded to say this to all the assembly of the sons of Israel: "The land that we passed through to spy it out is a very, very good land. If Jehovah has found delight in us, then he will certainly bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that is flowing with milk and honey. Only against Jehovah do not rebel, and you fear the people of the land, for they are bread to us. Their shelter has turned away from over them. And Jehovah is with us. Do not fear them." However, all the assembly talked of pelting them with stones, and Jehovah's glory appeared on the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. Finally, Jehovah said to Moses, "How long will this people treat me without respect? And how long will they not put faith in me for all the signs that I performed in among them? Let me strike them with pestilence and drive them away, and let me make you a nation greater and mightier than they are." But Moses said to Jehovah, "Then the Egyptians will be bound to hear that you by your power have led this people up out of their midst, and they will be bound to tell it to the inhabitants of this land. They have heard that you are Jehovah in among this people who has appeared face to face. You are Jehovah, and your cloud is standing over them, and you are going before them in the pillar of cloud by day and in the pillar of fire by night. Were you to put this people to death as one man, then the nations who have heard of your fame would certainly say this: because of Jehovah's not being able to bring this people into the land about which he swore to them, he proceeded to slaughter them in the wilderness. And now please let your power become great, O Jehovah, just as you have spoken, saying, 'Jehovah, slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness, pardoning error and transgression, but by no means will he give an exemption from punishment, bringing punishment for the error of the fathers upon sons, upon the third generation and upon the fourth generation. Forgive, please, the error of this people according to the greatness of your loving kindness, and just as you have pardoned this people from Egypt onward until now.' Then Jehovah said, 'I do forgive according to your word. And on the other hand, as I live, all the earth will be filled with the glory of Jehovah. But all the men who have been seeing my glory and my signs that I have performed in Egypt and in the wilderness, and yet kept testing me these 10 times and have not listened to my voice, will never see the land about which I swore to their fathers. Yes, all those treating me without respect will not see it. As for Caleb, my servant, because a different spirit has proved to be with him and he kept following wholly after me, I shall certainly bring him into the land where he has gone, and his offspring will take possession of it. While the Amalekites and the Canaanites are dwelling in the low plain, you people make a turn tomorrow and pull away to march to the wilderness by way of the Red Sea.'" And Jehovah went on to speak to Moses and Aaron, saying, "How long will this evil assembly have this murmuring that they are carrying on against me? I have heard the murmurings of the sons of Israel that they are murmuring against me. Say to them, 'As I live is the utterance of Jehovah, if I shall not do to you just that way as you have spoken in my ears, in this wilderness your carcasses will fall. Yes, all your registered ones of all your number from 20 years old upward, you who have murmured against me. As for you, you will not enter into the land in which I lifted up my hand in oath to reside with you, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. And your little ones who you said would become plunder, these also I shall certainly bring in, and they will indeed know the land that you have rejected, but the carcasses of you yourselves will fall in this wilderness, and your sons will become shepherds in the wilderness 40 years, and they will have to answer for your acts of fornication until your carcasses come to their end in the wilderness by the number of the days that you spied out the land, 40 days, a day for a year, you will answer for your errors 40 years, as you must know what my being estranged means. I, Jehovah, have spoken. If this is not what I shall do to all this evil assembly, those who have gathered together against me in this wilderness, they will come to their end, and there they will die. And the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, and who, when they returned, began making the whole assembly murmur against him by bringing forth a bad report against the land. Yes, the men bringing forth the bad report about the land will die by the scourge before Jehovah. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh will certainly live on of those men who went to spy out the land. When Moses proceeded to speak these words to all the sons of Israel, then the people began to mourn a great deal. Moreover, they got up early in the morning and tried to go up to the top of the mountain, saying, "Here we are, and we have to go up to the place that Jehovah mentioned, for we have sinned." But Moses said, "Why is it that you are passing beyond the order of Jehovah? But that will not succeed. Do not go up, because Jehovah is not in your midst, that you may not be defeated before your enemies. For the Amalekites and the Canaanites are there before you, and you are certain to fall by the sword, because for the reason that you turned back from following Jehovah, Jehovah will not continue with you." However, they presumed to go up to the top of the mountain, but the Ark of Jehovah's covenant, and Moses did not move away from the midst of the camp. Then the Amalekites and the Canaanites who were dwelling in that mountain came on down and began striking them and went scattering them as far as Hormah. That's the end of Numbers 14. So the disobedient ones were struck by the Amalekites and the Canaanites because they disobediently attempted to conquer the Promised Land after they had given a bad report. And that was not approved. Once Jehovah heard the bad report, they were to be punished, and they weren't going to be allowed any longer to enter or to even have the prospect of entering the Promised Land. But their youth, their young ones, their children would be given the opportunity. The next generation would be given an opportunity, and they would enter the Promised Land. Acts 23. Now Paul before the Sanhedrin, looking intently at the Sanhedrin, Paul said, "Men, brothers, I have behaved before God with a perfectly clear conscience down to this day." At this, the high priest, sometimes called the chief priest, but in this case, the chief priest, I believe, was Caiaphas. The high priest was another, there were two of them in the same family, but one was the actual high priest, and one was the chief priest from before, who was still alive but no longer serving as in that capacity. Anyway, Ananias was not the actual presiding chief priest, but he was the prior priest in that, who served in that capacity, is my understanding of this. So the high priest Ananias, he was the father of Caiaphas, I believe. He ordered those standing by him to strike him on the mouth. Then Paul said to him, "God is going to strike you, you whitewashed wall. Do you at one and the same time sit to judge me in accord with the law and transgressing the law command me to be struck?" Those standing by said, "Are you reviling the high priest of God?" And Paul said, "Brothers, I did not know he was high priest, for it is written, 'You must not speak injuriously of a ruler of your people.'" Now when Paul took note that the one part was of Sadducees, but the other part of Pharisees, and we noted that the ruling tribe was at that time the Sadducees, we saw that earlier in the scriptures, he proceeded to cry out in the Sanhedrin, "Men, brothers, I am a Pharisee, a son of Pharisees, a son of Pharisees. Over the hope of resurrection of the dead I am being judged. because he said this, a dissension arose between the Pharisees and Sadducees, and the multitude was split. For Sadducees say there is neither resurrection nor angel nor spirit. But the Pharisees publicly declare them all. So there broke out loud screaming, and some of the scribes of the party of the Pharisees rose and began contending fiercely, saying, "We find nothing wrong in this man, but if a spirit or an angel spoke to him." Now, when the dissension grew great, the military commander became afraid that Paul would be pulled to pieces by them. And he commanded the force of soldiers to go down and snatch him from their midst and bring him into the soldiers' quarters. But the following night, the Lord stood by him and said, "Be of good courage, for as you have been giving a thorough witness on the things about me in Jerusalem." This is Jesus, the Lord. "So you must also bear witness in Rome," Jesus told Paul. Now when it became day, the Jews formed a conspiracy and bound themselves with a curse, saying they would neither eat nor drink until they had killed Paul. There were more than 40 men that formed this oath-bound conspiracy. And they went to the chief priests and the older men and said, "We have solemnly bound ourselves with a curse not to take a bite of food until we have killed Paul. Now therefore you together with the Sanhedrin make it clear to the military commander why he should bring him down to you, as though you intended to determine more accurately the matters involving him. But before he gets near, we will be ready to do away with him." However, the son of Paul's sister heard of their lying in wait, and he came and entered into the soldiers' quarters and reported it to Paul. So Paul called one of the army officers to him and said, "Lead this young man off to the military commander, for he has something to report to him." Therefore this man took him and led him to the military commander and said, "The prisoner Paul called me to him and requested me to lead this young man to you, as he has something to tell you." The military commander took him by the hand and withdrew and began inquiring privately, "What is it you have to report to me?" He said, "The Jews have agreed to request you to bring Paul down to the Sanhedrin tomorrow, as though intending to learn something more accurate about him. Above all things, do not let them persuade you, for more than 40 men of theirs are lying in wait for him, and they have bound themselves with a curse, neither to eat nor to drink until they have done away with him. And they are now ready, waiting for the promise from you." Therefore the military commander let the young man go after ordering him, "Do not blab to anyone that you have made these things clear to me." And he summoned a certain two of the army officers and said, "Get 200 soldiers ready to march clear to Caesarea. Also 70 horsemen and 200 spearmen at the third hour of the night. Also provide beasts of burden that they may have Paul ride and convey him safely to Felix the governor." And he wrote a letter having this form: "Claudius Lysias, to His Excellence Governor Felix, greetings. This man was seized by the Jews and was about to be done away with by them, but I came suddenly with a force of soldiers and rescued him because I learned he was a Roman. And wishing to ascertain the cause for which they were accusing him, I brought him down into their Sanhedrin. I found him to be accused about questions of their law, but not charged with a single thing deserving of death or bonds. But because a plot that is to be laid against the man has been disclosed to me, I am at once sending him to you and commanding the accusers to bring against him, to speak against him before you. Therefore these soldiers took Paul according to their orders and brought him by night to Antipatris. The next day they permitted the horsemen to go on with him, and they returned to the soldiers' quarters." Right. "The horsemen entered into Caesarea and delivered the letter to the governor and also presented Paul to him. So he read it and inquired from what province he was and ascertained that he was from Cilicia. 'I shall give you a thorough hearing,' he said, 'when your accusers arrive also.' And he commanded that he be kept under guard in the Praetorian palace of Herod. Caesarea is south of Ptolemais, which is in turn south of Tyre. About something like 30 or 40, is it kilometers or miles? I'm not sure. So you get a rough picture of where these places are. On the west extremity, western extremity of the Promised Land is where Caesarea is, on the actual Sea of the Mediterranean. On that western, or the eastern coast of the Mediterranean, bordering the Promised Land. So part of the Promised Land, Judea, and what was then Judea, which had originally been the land of Canaan, and the land was part of the land promised to Abraham. So, we're very close to the end of our study, little ones. I'm not at full strength, of course. We'll see, but I'm certainly doing better now that I've got the antibiotic. But I think I might be still taking my vitamin C. I should be taking some vitamin C every day, I believe. But I'll also need to take probiotics. When you take antibiotic, you take a probiotic. And yogurt is the way that is suggested as a good way to do that. I think it's Lactobacillus acidophilus is a very good bacteria to have for restoring your intestinal flora. When you're using antibiotics, not just after you've done using the antibiotic, but right at the time you're taking the antibiotic. My time, our time, although I love you very much, our time is up. It's July 14th, 2023, and on my behalf, this is Annie, and this is Dusty, saying bye for now.